Have you ever asked yourself, what's the best way I can contribute to sci-fi and fantasy in the literary world? If you have, the answer is simple. You just have to be Veronica Belmont or Tom Merritt and host the Sword and Laser podcast. If for some reason you can't be Veronica Belmont or Tom Merritt, however, don't despair. All is not lost. You can still head over to patreon.com/swordandlaser and help fund their hard work. Every cent you give adds more swords and more lasers to their growing arsenal of speculative literary goodness. That's patreon.com/swordandlaser.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Sword and Laser. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
Sword and Laser is a book club. Sword and Laser is a book club, but it's so much more. We bring you author interviews, news from the world of science fiction and fantasy, and awesome discussions from fans just like you.
Take three.
I'm just rolling with it this time. You know, you get to see how the sausage gets made. It's all good.
Yeah. It's a delicious, delicious intro sausage that we've made for you today. Please enjoy.
What are you numbing today, Tom?
I just finished having some homemade guacamole.
Ooh, I could have used that because I just had some like crappy microwave nachos and that really would have kicked it up a notch.
We have gotten into making nachos lately and I was getting the ingredients and saw the price of pre-made guacamole that's decent. And I was like, you know, I don't think guacamole is that hard to make. Those avocados much cheaper. And turns out I was right. Guacamole is super easy to make. Like the hardest part about making guacamole is chopping the onion and the jalapeno. And a lot of people aren't even going to put jalapeno in. So then you're just chopping the onion. We put tomatoes in ours too. So I guess chop the tomato, but the chopping, that's it. The mashing avocados, when they're ripe, they mash.
They are
the mashed potatoes of the avocado world.
That's very, very specific. Yes, yeah. They are the mashed potatoes of the avocado world.
So we've been making delicious guacamole and nachos. So we had more guacamole because Eileen found 5 avocados for $5.
I miss California.
I know, right? So we made a lot of guacamole. We made 5 avocados worth of guacamole and we've been eating our way through it. So that's what I was just snacking on, which actually made me realize when I was like, oh, this is going to be my, what are we nomming? Whenever we do Sword and Laser in the evening on Wednesdays, which is when we normally do it. Today, we're doing it in the afternoon on a Tuesday. I always have a Tavala meal because I have to do Sword and Laser.
Oh, so it's like self-perpetuating.
Yeah. So it's like, yesterday we made salmon and gnocchi, right? You know, it was not a Tavala meal, but on the Sword and Laser evenings, you're like, you're always eating that Tavala. I'm like, yeah. Oh, that's why. Because I'm like, you know, I've got Sword and Laser coming up. Let's just do the Tavala meal. That's faster.
You know, Mark notes in chat that you've been talking a lot about fried chicken lately. So I was kind of expecting that as well to be your what are you nomming for the week? But was that last week, not this week, perhaps?
When was that? That was that like 5 days ago. So I guess that was Friday night that we got. We did delivery of Korean fried chicken from BB.Q. Oh,
nice.
And it was delicious.
Speaking of chat room, we have a very large live audience tonight. I guess that's the difference between doing evening versus doing it during the afternoon. So hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us to this live recording. Super cool. I am nomming my annual favorite, I suppose, Cadbury cream eggs.
Do you know, and I think I may have told you this before, every year at Easter, I see a Cadbury cream egg, I think of you. And I buy one and eat it in your honor.
That's really funny.
Because I always see them. I'm like, oh, Veronica loves those. And I'm like, oh, I wish I could give her one right now. But she's in Vancouver and far away. And then I buy it anyway and I eat it.
Something that I found here that I did not see very often in the States is the mini Cadbury cream eggs.
Ooh.
So they're like just like maybe
Cadbury quail
75%. They're almost exactly the size of a quail egg, actually.
Oh, that's funny.
They are smaller, like maybe 75% of a normal size. But it makes it dangerous because a full-size Cadbury cream egg for me is like, that's a juicer.
You're not having a second one.
Yeah. You're not having another one. Like, that's it for the day. But like a tiny one, you're like, ooh, I could pop a couple of these in my gaping maw.
I'm pretty soon you've eaten 10 of them.
And then you have accumulated much more than just the one Cadbury cream egg mass equivalent. But anyway, yeah, so it's Easter, I guess, this weekend. We're not religious in our household in that
regard.
Are
you religious when you're outside of your household?
If it means buying Cadbury cream eggs, then, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. If that's a requirement,
that is
then
a sacrament you take part in.
That's right. Cool.
Are they better? Are they better now that you've lived in Canada for a few years, like the Cadbury cream eggs?
You know, it's a small sample size, I would say. I've only had maybe like the equivalent of a 4-pack so far this season. But they have all been fresh, which is not, freshly laid by the bunny. Because sometimes you get them and they're dried out on the inside. Yeah. They're not like ooey gooey. Mm-hmm. It's important for them to be ooey gooey in the center.
Oh yeah. That's part of the experience for sure.
Exactly. I did see a funny, like one of those like stupid cooking TikTok videos where the woman got a giant Cadbury cream egg, and which is, I didn't know those existed even, the like real, like the size of your head.
Wow.
And she put it on top of a cake and was like, and like cooked it to like melt it so that it would melt on the cake. But when it melted, there were actually more small foil wrapped Cadbury cream eggs inside of it. Because you're supposed to break it open and get the like Cadbury cream eggs on the inside. Yeah.
Funny.
And she didn't like read the instructions. And so a fallen angel asks, how do you eat yours? The correct answer is bite a very small hole and suck all of the yolk out.
Oh, really?
And then eat the egg after that. That's the correct answer.
What is that?
Like a real creepy person. Like a real creepy person.
Yeah. Like a mongoose.
Is that what they do?
Yeah.
They say that's the right way to do it. So
okay, good.
Glad I've got that down. It's been a long time for me doing that. So I can't change now. Too late. Can't teach an old bunny lion new tricks.
Damn straight.
Anyway, let's jump into the quick burns.
The Nebula Award finalist list is up, and the Nebulas are near me. They're over in Pasadena this year. So I'm toying with the idea that maybe I should try to head over there. The Nebula Award for novel nominees are The Saint of Bright Doors by Vajra Chandrasekara, The Water Outlaws by S.L. Huang, Translation State by Anne Leckie, The Terraformers by Annalee Newitz, Shigeti and the Brass Head of Abalofan by Wole Talabi.
I've heard that's really good. Yeah.
And Witch King by Martha Wells. And of course, Jeff added, it looks like my to read list is about to grow again. The Hugos always have good nominees. Well, usually.
Easy there.
Yeah. Let's just bracket off this whole conversation about this year's Hugos and say, like, generally speaking, the Hugos have very good nominees. But I have to say, the Nebulas never disappoint. They always have a really, really good lineup of nominees. And this year is no exception.
I love Annalee. I think that she's wonderful. I could not get into the Terraformers.
Really?
Maybe it was because I was doing the audiobook. Mm. But yeah, I really wanted to like it. And I just don't think I got in far enough, perhaps. But I should give it another go.
That makes me feel better.
Why?
Because you've never read any of my books.
I've read Pilot X.
Did you like it?
I read Pilot X. Yeah, I liked it.
So you finished it?
Of course I finished it.
Okay.
What was the other one I read? What was the one I did the audiobook for?
Well, that doesn't count. You had to read the audiobook.
That still counts. I still read it.
You were hired to read it, though.
But I read it.
Okay,
so you can't say I haven't read it.
Fair. A Roborator says that counts. Roborator is the moderator, so therefore it counts. Okay, good.
All right. Jan says, as Deadline reports, Michael Ende's The Neverending Story. Am I saying that right? Is it Ende or End? E-N-D-E. The Neverending Story is to be adapted again as a series of live-action movies. Seesaw Films, The King's Speech, for example, will produce together with Michael Ende Productions.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know either. I think it's End, but I don't know that for sure. Also, obligatory joke about, I guess they will never stop making these movies because it's called The Neverending Story. So somebody has to make that joke.
Oh.
So we'll just, stipulate that joke has been made.
So a series of live action movies. That's interesting.
Yeah. I sort of... I have good feelings about the Neverending Story movie, but I know people who've gone back and watched it and said it's not as good as we remember it. So I've not gone back and watched it. It wasn't at the top of my list of things I need to be remade, but that said, I'm not offended or anything. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm very curious because it, I mean, the previous film, you know, have I read the book? I don't think I've read the book.
Well,
so I haven't read the book.
I never finished it.
I've only seen the movie in my youth, which is, of course, scarring, permanently scarring. And I don't know if I need more of that content, but I will probably check it out. It depends. It depends.
Yeah. We tend to avoid obituaries on Sword and Laser because at a certain point you're just doing obituaries every week because there's always somebody, passing away, sadly. But Werner Vinge is a titan in the sci-fi literary genre, multiple Hugo Award winner, so does seem appropriate to sort of, you know, make an exception to that rule in this case.
Yeah. So he very sadly passed away at the age of 79 of Parkinson's or complications from Parkinson's, as announced by David Brin on Facebook quite recently. So very sorry to hear about his passing. As you mentioned, a titan in the industry, you know, Fire Upon the Deep, Rainbow's End, lots of other very well-known novels, books that we have read here on the podcast. So that's a big one. That's a big one. And too soon, for sure.
Well, 79 with Parkinson's is pretty good. My grandfather had Parkinson's and died younger than that. And so, you know, it is heartening to see that. But yeah, you'd rather not see the announcement at all, of course.
Absolutely. Robberator says, Butterfly in the Sky trailer celebrates Reading Rainbow's legacy. I saw this. This was definitely a tearjerker. So I know this isn't directly sci-fi fantasy related, perhaps, because of course Reading Rainbow covered books of all genres, for young people. But I think it's great to recognize the impact that series had on many of us in our youths and young adulthoods. And LeVar Burton, of course, being a friend of the show and a wonderful advocate for literacy and reading. So I can't wait to see this. It's going to start playing mid-March. So it might already be out in some places across North America.
Yeah, I was too old to be considered in the target market for Reading Rainbow, but my brother, who is 7 years younger, was someone who enjoyed watching it. And so as a too cool for school teenager, I would sit, you know, and just keep him company while it was on. I wouldn't have watched it on my own, but you know, it wasn't too bad. I loved it. Yeah, absolutely loved it. But you couldn't have got any teenager to admit it at the time, but it was wonderful. It was a wonderful show.
Meeting LeVar for the first time at CES back when we were at CNET, I think I think I was more excited to meet him from Reading Rainbow than even Star Trek in many ways.
Sure. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think that the dad vibes were strong and it just was like extremely heartwarming. He's a wonderful person.
He is. He is generous and charming and wonderful. So, Good on you, LeVar Burton. Licorice posted that for the low price of $1,550, you can name a character in the next Scalzi book. Actually, it's kind of too late, but the winning bid to name one of his characters was $4,050. This was, of course, for charity before you get too bent out of shape about it. It was tax deductible.
It's not going to Scalzi. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah. The charity was not Scalzi either. Correct.
So this is called, for those familiar in the fiction world, a Tuckerization. So that is what it means when a real person name is put into a fiction novel on purpose. So this was the going price for a Tuckerization in a to be determined upcoming Scalzi book. So very cool. Yeah, that's pretty neat.
And the Locus Science Fiction Foundation was the charity. If you want to look those folks up, they are 501(c) organization. And Scalzi said, "I don't promise not to kill your character that's named after you, but at least it's tax deductible."
I mean, wouldn't that be a great honor, honestly? Like, that would be like if Scalzi killed me, like that would be worth so much money.
Especially because deaths in the Scalziverse tend to be comic and amazing. Not every single time, but, you know, certainly could be. So that'd be pretty great.
All right. Oaken says, Tanith Lee was named the winner of the 2024 SFWA Infinity Award. This honor is awarded posthumously to writers who passed away before they could be considered for the Damon Knight Memorial Grandmaster Award. Last year's winner was Octavia E. Butler. A Sword and Laser has read books from both authors in past years. Thanks, Oaken.
Yeah, Oaken also pointed out that with the rising cost of ebooks, libraries have been adapting how they deal with them, and said the move with ebooks to a model where libraries pay a higher price and or have to deal with a cap on checkouts for each purchase is causing funding issues. Parties on both sides have a legitimate concern, though. Publishers and authors want to get paid, while government agencies want to maximize access to materials for their constituents.
Yeah, it's a tough problem that I don't know if anyone's come up with a good solution for yet.
Yeah. One note of thanks to everyone who submits quick burns, whether it's in Goodreads or Discord. As we get more people submitting them in Discord, one note, if you could write a little something, I know in Discord, it's really easy to slap in the link and press return, and then it auto-populates the actual story's title. But it's more useful to us if you do the same thing you do on Goodreads, where you're like, I like this because da 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 da, that just helps us kind of put it in context better. If all you got time for is the link, we'll take it. We appreciate all the submissions, but just a note, if you can have a little time, put in a sentence or two, that helps.
Good call. And yes, as always, you can submit those over on Goodreads in our Quick Burns thread or over on Discord. All right, well, now it is time for Bear Your Sword, which is our feedback from the audience.
Calvi wrote, speaking of Neuromancer, is anyone up for an alt read?
Ooh.
Because it is coming to become a TV show. I'd love to reread it, and I expect we have some time before when the TV show comes out. It'd be fun to get a group take on it.
That's fun. Yeah, I'll leave it up to Roborator to set that up if he's interested in doing that on behalf of Calvi. But yeah, I don't know if we have a quorum on that, if people want to do that, or just, yeah, I feel like if anyone ever wants to suggest an all read, just jump into it and we can talk about it and make it happen.
Would it be an alt read when, as Tamahome points out, William Gibson's I think it was Tessie Dave pointed out, sorry, it's not in the rundown. It was the first podcast Sword and Laser book pick. It was the third book club book pick, but the first one where we had the podcast around it. So would it be an alt pick or a reread?
It's a reread.
Or is it an alt reread?
It's an alt reread. Rob is upset because he heard his name mentioned in the chat, but he wasn't paying attention enough to know what I said. He's like, wait, what am I nominated for? I was just asking if you want to help start a thread to get things started for a potential reread of Neuromancer as an alt reread. I don't know what the process is for that, but I think
like the idea of when a show's coming up, even if we've read the book before, to everybody like, ooh, let's read it before the show comes up. That's fun.
Totally. All righty. Tamahome does say that William Gibson's narration of Neuromancer is on archive.org. His intentions might come through a little better through his voice. What were we talking about intentions of?
I don't know.
What's the context there? Tamahome,
I didn't know if there was
a context there?
Or if Tamahome was just saying, like, it'll be better when the author reads it.
Which intentions are we speaking of? Just a pro of it. Just an additional benefit,
yeah,
he says.
Just a pro, okay, well, instead of a con. Sense. Got it. Con! Yeah.
His noir tone, yes.
Yes, definitely. All right, Cool. And then Charles says, I believe that the Bloodsworn saga, the trilogy that the Shadow of the Gods is part of, is just one long story split into three parts. Book two ends in a cliffhanger as well. Oh. Wait until book three is out before starting them. Too late. With that said, I have really enjoyed reading them. I guess one of my doorways, aka wheelhouses, is setting.
Okay, well, that makes me both feel better and be more angry. So I think I'll just
So I get the feel better, wait. Which is like, oh, okay, it's not, it's meant to be that way. This is kind of like Lord of the Rings. It was meant to be one book. Why does it make you more angry? Is it because you have to read two more books and you have to wait for one to come out? Yeah, okay. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. And then finally, Calvi also posted in a couple of podcasts over the last year, Veronica has mentioned the type of books, and I can't seem to remember how or what she said, but I remember thinking I should write it down. I'm having trouble finding it here. Does anyone remember the conversation to write it out or at least remember the podcast number? Okay. So this is, I can understand why this is confusing over time.
This is the type one, type two, type three thing.
This is actually, it's not type of books. It's fun types, which as John Nevitz kind of explained in the thread as well, I am using that framework to explain my enjoyment of fiction books in a sense. So there's actually a really great graphic that Tamahome posted in the thread. And specifically, this has been around, as this graphic shows, around outdoor activities, which is how I learned,
that's where
how
you
I
learned
came
it.
To
okay.
start using yeah, it, yeah. right? So type one, so the fun scale. Type one, fun. Fun to do, fun to remember. Type two, fun. Hurts a bit to do, but fun in retrospect. So you look back on it, this is a great example, is like a really long hike or something that's kind of like a brutal death march. And then at the end, you're like, oh, but that view was so worth it. I'm so glad we got outside today. That was really great. I had so much fun with my friends. Type three, fun. Not fun to do. Not fun in retrospect. So this would be like, I went out, I did a really big hike, and then I sprained my ankle and my friends had to carry me down afterwards. And I didn't even get to see the view because I've just like busted up. But typically type three fun is also, but it makes a good story.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes it worth it in some regards.
Otherwise you'd be like, well, it's not fun if you know, but but you get the fun out of the story. So
my best part about this, sorry, but the best part about this thread though, is how people go on to add more types for books specifically. So I think we should go through them. So this is like a new scale that Tazzy okay. Dave started okay. and goes on.
Before we do that, I just want to get the easy way to remember it is type one is the only one that's fun to do. Type three is the only one that's not fun at all. So type one was like, it's all fun. Type three is not fun, makes a great story. And then type two is splitting the difference. That's how I keep them straight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. I just always remember type two because that's usually when I think about the scale.
Yeah.
Because that's when I'm referencing it.
Because type one, you're like, you know.
You're just like, oh, that was fun. Yeah. You know, I don't need to scale for that. Tazzy Dave says, I think this is how it goes. I may have the order slightly wrong. So this is very similar to the fun types. You enjoyed it while reading it. And on reflection for type one, you didn't enjoy reading it. But on reflection, it was a good book. Like you're happy you read it. This is like Poppy
Yeah, the classic, me, I'm glad you know? I read it, but maybe, yeah.
Totally. Type three, you enjoyed reading it, but on reflection, it was a bad book.
Okay, that's different. That's departure from the scale. Okay.
Yeah, type four, you didn't enjoy reading it at all. Randy says, type five book, nope. Tamahome says, type six book, you rage read it. Definitely done that before. Tazzy Dave goes on, type seven book, you threw it across the room in disgust. Type eight book, you throw it across the room and discuss, instantly regret it because it's on your expensive e-reader. And type nine, one you have on your bookshelf to impress guests, you'll never read it.
I like type nine. That's a good one. Yeah.
Type 10, one that lives at the bottom of your TBR list. Every year it gets pushed further and further down.
Definitely have those. Yep.
Type 11, a book you keep picking up and starting, but put down and forget for a few more years.
These are so good.
Type 12, that sequel you are dying to read, but the author keeps delaying to the point where you know it is never coming, unlike Winter.
Ah, what are you trying to say? That feels specific somehow. I don't know why.
Yeah, this is great. Thank you. Thank you
gosh.
For that.
These are amazing. Very funny. Thank you for putting these together. That's so good. So good. Well, let's apply those types, shall we?
All right. Let's do it. It is time for the Book of the Month discussion, kicking things off with the tournament winner, Tom. I feel like you should make the announcement here.
Cordelia's Honor by Lois McMaster Bujold, which finished up the March Madness bracket over Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies 52-48, Veronica. Cordelia's Honor took a very torturous route to the finals, Veronica, barely squeaking by The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy in round two, 50-49, by just one single vote, squeaking by Some Desperate Glory, which some felt should have been favored, even though it was a lower seed, and then taking on the very popular Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies to take home the crown. And then, on top of that, confusing the heck out of us when we found out it's not even a book. It's an omnibus.
I'm sorry?
It's an omnibus. Cordelia's Honor is actually a combination of two of Lois McMaster Bujold's books. Her first book, which is called Shards of Honor, and her seventh book, which is called Barriar. Shards of Honor was published in 1986, Barriar in 1991. Cordelia's Honor pushed them together and was published in 1996. So
this is interesting. I'm getting new intel right now via the chat from Mantissa, who says, someone nominated Shards of Honor, which I seconded. But someone else said if we did Cordelia's Honor, we would get Shards of Honor and Barriar. So we pulled Shards of Honor and nominated Cordelia's Honor, which was seconded and thirded. It was a total conspiracy.
We blew the lid off it. Thank you. Thank you for being the whistleblower, Mantissa. That's amazing. I support this. Once I navigated my way through all of the connections, we had several people saying, well, I don't want to read it then because it's the seventh book and I want to read them in order. And that is a whole can of worms, because the history and the reason that Cordelia's Honor was put out as an omnibus is that Barriar was originally part of Shards of Honor. It was the first book that Lois McMaster Bujold had written. Not all of Barriar was written, but when she took it to the publisher, they said, you know what, we think we should end the story here and leave this other part out. And so they published Shards of Honor as part of what she had written. She held on to what she had written, finished it later, and published it as Barriar, which was the seventh book, but a flashback, because Barriar's plot takes place immediately after Shards of Honor. If they weren't separate books, you wouldn't know they're separate books. Because
I see
what the last event happens, you know, in the evening at the end of Shards of Honor, and then the next event in Barriar is the next morning, right? Like, there is no gap here. The only thing you'll notice is Barriar definitely starts with a little bit more recap, you know, where you're just like, and that's why I went and did this back in the time. And it's like, oh, if this was part of the same book, you wouldn't need to do that. But otherwise it's very much a continuous, story, and it's in the timeline. So you're not spoiling yourself for events in the other books, which all take place later for the most part.
I see. Okay. I didn't know any of that. So yeah. This is very helpful. Thank you.
And in fact,
that rundown,
it was such a complicated, way of doing things that I made the book briefing public at patreon.com/swordandlaser. Book briefing usually only goes to everyone at the upper tiers of the Patreon, but it went to everybody. Even if you're not a patron, you can go read it and try to sort this out. Because the other thing is, Lois McMaster Bujold has her own recommendation of the order to read them in, which is not the publication order. And Cordelia's Honor is the first in her recommendation. So, If you're really set on reading them in publication order, then you probably don't want to do this. But if you just want to make sure you avoid spoilers for the rest of the series, you're totally fine. If you want to honor the author's intentions, you're totally fine, because that's the way it's going. I am really enjoying it, too.
Nice. Oh, you started it already.
Yeah. I've actually finished Shards of Honor. I'm already into Barriar.
Oh, okay. Wow, you're fast. You're like me with Iron Widow last month. Like I'd finished it before March had even started.
Yeah. No, it's really good. And Shards of Honor is a little bit shorter. They're both kind of short. Together, they do make a normal size book, maybe even a biggish book. But yeah, it is fun. It is a Horatio Hornblower of space. It is both progressive, even for now, with some things that you're like, huh, I wonder if she would have chose to write it differently now. But, you know, nothing. Mm-hmm. There are some trigger warnings. You should go look them up if you're concerned about things, because there are some descriptions and things that some people may not want to encounter. But yeah, it's a fun space story. It's a space love story. I don't know how to describe it. It's good.
Space love opera?
Yeah, space love opera.
All right. Well, we are here also to wrap up our pick from March, which was Iron Widow. So let's jump into that as well. This will be a spoilery discussion. I think I'm going to struggle because, like I said, I read it a long time ago now, and I've read like 4 books since then. So this is going to be a little bit of a challenge for me, but I think it'll be helpful because we have lots of good threads on Goodreads from people to kind of spur the discussion right now. Overall, did you enjoy it? Did you think it was a worthwhile pick? Are you happy with your choice?
Yeah. So I don't know how much, I can't remember how much of this I've said before when we weren't being spoilery, but now that we're able to be spoilery, I'm not going to hold back. This book constantly surprised me. I absolutely loved the premise, you know, the sort of like reimagining, for lack of a better word, medieval China, a China at the period of the Empress Wu Zetian, and bringing mechas into it. That's brilliant. I would occasionally feel like our main character was being a little bit preachy, a little bit tiresome, and a little bit over the top. And then it would turn out that, yes, in fact, that's right. She was intentionally being that because she's a teenager, you know, right. And I'm like, oh, okay. So we have other characters who can point that out and acknowledge it, which then I felt was more effective in tracing the boundaries of the issues that are being treated in Iron Widow, because you have someone who takes them to an extreme, and then you have someone pull them back, and then you get a better sense of like, oh, and that's the reality behind the issue, which in a fantasy book involving mechas and aliens and all of that is fantastic. So I kept thinking I was getting tired of it, and then it would surprise me and bring me and be like, oh, okay, so there's depth here. That's really good. And then, of course, you have the twist ending, which
the twist ending was great,
which really makes you go, now I have to read the next one. Yeah. Yeah.
I started getting that. Well, we can talk about that a little bit further along. I wanted to touch on something you said, which was that kind of frustration with Wu. And I also want to caveat that I'm not going to be good at pronouncing these names. I actually worked really hard to try to get the pronunciations right, and I think my mouth parts just won't make the right shape. So forgive me for that. But I was like, oh, she feels like one of those girls in my like college masculinities courses.
Okay. Yeah.
That is right. Like, mm-hmm.
Yep.
Like, I get what you're going for. I agree with you. But like something about your delivery is just not working for me. It's mm-hmm. like pushing me away rather than bringing me in. And I'm like, am I being a bad feminist right now? It kind of feels like I'm being a shitty feminist. But at the same time, I was like, she's been through a lot, like a lot more than I've ever had to deal with. Like if anybody has the right to feel and express the things that she's feeling and expressing, it's her. Like hard, you know, period, as the kids say. But she was, yeah, she had a lot of reasons. She had a lot of right to be angry, especially with regards to her sister and the treatment she had received from her family and kind of the confines of this society that she was living in that did not value her as a person or a human, in spite of the fact that she was, you know, clearly strong, clearly powerful. And that they had done that systematically throughout, you know, generations, for really seemingly like still no good reason, like even by the end of the book, and maybe I'm incorrect in my memory at this point, but the reason why like they kept the women in the dark and society in the dark was really just to uphold the patriarchy, right? Like there wasn't like a really,
yeah,
to uphold the power structure. Mm-hmm. Like there was no reason. And in fact, it was to their detriment, I would say.
As it usually is. Ways,
as it usually is.
Right. So
that was my vibe. So I'm glad that you kind of agreed with me there, had similar feelings, but putting it in context is important.
You had a much better way of expressing it than I did, but I feel like it's an exploration in being justified doesn't always make you right. And that's what we experienced with her was, you know, she would be that person that you described. And then sometimes Li Shimin or someone else would contradict her and she would realize it sometimes. Right. I'm like, yeah, you're like crazy angry. And I totally get why, but it's a little much. And it's like, oh, right. But that's what you'd be like. And then we didn't just leave it there and say, well, you just have to put up with her being crazy angry. You showed mm-hmm. character growth. You showed her realizing like, oh, I'm justified in being angry, but that doesn't mean it's right to be angry all the time. You know, you have to.
That scene where she kills the prince and comes out, like they open the door of the Mecca.
Oh yeah.
And she's just like, I was like, yeah, girl.
right. Yeah. You're definitely cheering for her in a huge,
like this was something I feel as though I've not had enough in some regards, angry female characters who speak their mind. And maybe this is from reading a lot of romanticy lately where a lot of the female characters are kind of like, they're kind of turned inward. At first, at least, and you're like, why aren't you speaking up? Why aren't you fighting back? Why aren't you pushing more? And I liked that immediately. She was like, I'm not taking this ish. Like, no way. Like, I'm going to like be very calculated about this. I'm going to figure out like how I'm going to strike. Like, I'm going to like do my thing and vengeance will be mine, et cetera, et cetera.
I got nothing to lose. Yeah,
exactly. And that was refreshing in a way too for me. Absolutely.
Yeah. But it isn't all paper characters that she's just going to cut her way through. That was the other thing I had to learn and appreciate is like, oh yeah. She is going to still grow, from this. So yeah, I enjoyed this quite a bit.
All right. So we have one thread, that started by Jay, who said, how I thought it would go. One thing I often find interesting about books is expectation. Personally, I like when I expect a book to follow a certain, sometimes predictable storyline, and then it goes very differently. And yet, I see some readers get annoyed by this. Then again, I have been annoyed a few times with Neil Gaiman when I felt like he was making his story go a weird direction just to subvert expectation. Still, I had certain ideas about Iron Widow that were constantly being subverted. At the beginning, we are introduced to Wu Zixian, and she has a vendetta, and we can get behind it. The system is stacked against her, where she is expected to go into battle and die, but her goal is to flip this and instead kill. What I expected was that she would get paired with successively more powerful male pilots, only to be revealed to be stronger and stronger when she killed them. Then, inevitably and reluctantly, those in charge would move her to the male seat and start pairing her with sacrificed males. Oh, interesting take. I like that. What I expected to happen was that she would inevitably have to come to terms with what the males were being forced to do by becoming the very thing she hated. But that story arc would have been predictable, or at least more predictable than the one we got. What did you expect to happen in the book?
This is so well said, Jay. I agree. I kind of kept expecting that too, which is why I was getting annoyed. And then they brought in Li Shimin and you're like, ah, here we go. Here's the ultimate jerk that she's going to have to conquer. And it turns out
I knew it was going to be enemies to lovers immediately.
I kind of also knew, but they did it. And she wrote it in a different way than I expected.
Totally.
She made Li Shimin way more sympathetic, way faster. And then made Wu Zetan have to confront like, oh, I'm really set up to hate you and I want to hate you for everything, but I'm finding out that I can't. So, I thought that was very cleverly done and very well expressed, Jay.
And then as others go on to express the polyamorous relationship that emerges
throughout
the course of the story, which I think like, I, like others, I think, thought that Yishi and Shiming were going to be a pair. What I didn't expect was that it was going to be like, okay, we're more powerful with the three of us. Mm-hmm. Like, we all love each other in different ways. Like, this is working.
Triangles are stronger.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, yeah, let's go with this. All right, you go. So that was nice. And I have never, outside of vaginal fantasy, experienced polyamory, to my knowledge, in inside genre fiction. So I thought that was pretty interesting and neat.
I'm trying to think.
I see your gears are turning.
Well, I'm trying to remember because I feel like there's been at least one, if not two, other stories that had polyamorous characters in them. But I'm not confident enough to say what they were.
Expanse?
Was it? Yeah, Expanse. You're right. Yeah. I don't know if it's in the book we read, the first book. It may not come until later. Yeah, it may not be in Leviathan Wakes. It may come later. But you're right. Absolutely. It's in the Expanse.
Got it. That's cool. Yeah, I never read past the first book, only watched the show. So I missed out. So very cool. Yeah, great expectations, I think.
Subverted the expectations twice because you're like, well, I know what you're doing. You're trying to set up a traditional love triangle and then you're going to have the two guys get together and you're going to subvert my expectations. And then she's like, guess what? I'm going to subvert your expectations again. Ha ha.
Exactly. Yeah. And the ending, I think that also it subverted expectations in a different way. But yeah. I think when the Wenwens were basically like screaming out, like when they were screaming at them to stop attacking them
away,
and to leave
get
them
out
alone,
of here.
Go
yeah.
away.
Yeah.
I was like,
I started to get suspicious. Like,
that's
why are they saying go
yeah.
away? What's that about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a new version of this story that we're suddenly getting from the mouth of the enemy.
Yeah.
So that was, I guess in that sense, not that surprising, but I liked the way that they kind of held it to the very end and set us up for the next book.
Indeed.
Fun little tidbit. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to move us along to the next audiobook narrator by Trike. Started listening to the audiobook, which is narrated by Rong Fu. Her name sounds like a bad jest in English, but she's Chinese, whose family emigrated to Canada when she was a kid. Her name is also distinctive, so I immediately recognized it. She plays the Navigator on Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
I can see that. Yeah,
actors
I can hear
end
that,
up
rather.
Being narrators quite often because narrating an audiobook takes a little bit of acting chops. So that's cool.
For
I didn't realize it was the same person. Thank you for bringing that out, Trike.
And then we have a message from Paul that made me crack up because the title is Her Spirit Pressure. It's over 18,000, which is like, you know, from it's over 9,000 from Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing.
That's
yeah,
good.
He just basically goes on need. To say that's yeah. quantifying, being able to quantify, like having a tool, a machine effectively that quantifies your spirit power is a pretty cool feature and a very interesting like magic system, combat centric magic system where you can actually like that can go up and down or that can be impacted by things. And that was, it's kind of like quantized like energy storage from electrons, you know? So I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah. By the way, John Taloney pointed out in this thread that Heinlein, Moon is a Harsh Mistress, has something he described as line marriage, which was a form of polyamory.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I didn't remember that either. Good memory, John.
Very good memory. Very good memory. All right. Well, is there anything else? I mean, there's so much to talk about in this book. I mean,
I was surprised. And pleasantly surprised that there were fewer people who were critical of this book than there usually are. Mm. I was expecting there to be, I think if you remember in the setup, in the kickoff of it, I was like, this is going to be a divisive book for some people. Some people are going to think they're going to not like it, but hang in there. And I was alluding to that fact of like, she's really angry. And if you think that that's all she's going to be, hang in there. This character has depth. And because I thought that might rub some people the wrong way, but it looks like everybody hung in there and realized and had the same experience I did, which is that this is an excellently written story.
Yeah, I think it was, there are definitely tough aspects of it. You know, I think from the feet binding, which is, you know, historically accurate, to the patriarchal systems of power, to the war, the ongoing war, and the way that her family was treating her and whether or not she wanted to save them or, you know, exact her revenge on them, I think is, you know, that was a major struggle for her too. And ultimately, you know, I don't know if there was good closure there, but I think she probably did what needed to be done.
Yeah.
I don't actually remember what she did at the end. She brought them to the compound, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But she's
and then they were betrayed, of course, by the other Mecca. And that was, you know, who had essentially kind of like their own safety held over their head, finding out that there was a whole other like group of people beyond the wall who were, you know, understanding how things were working a little bit more. Yeah,
and
fascinating.
Li Shimin is dead? Question mark.
Oh yeah.
Right. And the Heavenly Council says, look, if you shut up about the Hunduns, we'll bring back Shimin. Deal?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot going on for this next book. So I'm very, very curious. Licorice says, I thought she killed them because she realized all they cared about was her younger brother. I don't remember exactly what happened there with the family. I thought she brought them back, but it was like a ploy by the other pilot. Well, can't remember everything all the time, I suppose. But overall, I liked it. I thought it was it had themes that we haven't really dealt with a lot in our book picks. We haven't done many mechas in the past, which I thought was neat. The magic/technology system was very unique,
yeah.
I would say. Yeah, it felt both fantastical and science fictional.
The way that she tied in spirit pressure and the mechas and everything together was really cool.
Totally, yeah. As Count Zeroor says, I think this might be our first mecha. I think you might be right. Though, were there something similar? I want to say, was there something similar in Old Man's War? Or is that, am I thinking
yeah.
of a different
no,
book?
I think you're right. There is a mecha-ish kind of like body armor
thing.
Yeah.
I might be making that up, but that feels right.
No, I think you're right. Yeah. I think he climbs in something, you know, like a.
Mantis says they held her family hostage, which didn't work. She was like, all right, that's fine. Kill him. I don't give a crap. Yeah. I don't give a care.
I have a found cool. family. Bye.
Yeah. Seriously. My found polyamorous triangle. Of love.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening so much. Our show is currently entirely funded by you, our patrons. If you want to help support us, you can head over to patreon.com/swordandlaser.
You can also support the show by buying books through our links. You can find links to the books we talk about and some of our favorites at swordandlaser.com/picks.
Send us an email, feedback@swordandlaser.com. We are on Instagram, X, and Mastodon @swordandlaser. And all of our discussions happen over on goodreads.com/swordandlaser and our Discord. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there. We'll be right back.